We present Beachcomber by the Way, selections from the humor of J.B. Morton, with Richard Ingrams as the author.
Greetings, my public.
Interruptions from John Wells as Prodnose.
What is all this?
Be gone, you oaf.
And Patricia Routledge and John Sessions as several red-bearded dwarfs, amongst others. Beachcomber by the Way.
Greetings, moronic proles. And now, by unpopular demand, Nature Notes with Mr. Samuel Fadge, countryman.
Hello there, and good news for all bird lovers. The Cornwall Wild Birds Order has extended protection not only to the dirty-crested foopy, but also the scunnet, the bootcrake, the bulbous pantstring, the ocker, Farmillo's leather-throated prancer, and the buttered scissorbird, all of which may be found along the cliffs between Tretoothpick and Polewaddle in the mating season. However, still no word on the knocking horselark. One of the rarest birds in Cornwall, it has an artificial brown beard made of sedge, freckles on its belly, a wart under each wing, a small blue hat tied beneath the chin by a Coast Guard's bootlace, a Welsh overcoat fastening at the back with buttons made of crystallised suet, and little yellow pointed boots. Its square eyes differentiate it from the marsh horselark. Every time it whistles, its boots fill with sand, and its long, low, undulating flight is accompanied by a strident knocking, like the sound of a piece of iron repeatedly banging against the roof of a train on a windy night in August near Appleby. Bang, 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 bang. The sooner this damn nuisance is extinct, the better. Till next time, bye for now.
One must do something to satisfy the many nature lovers there are nowadays. Personally, I feel the blame lies with our old poet laureate, as I shall demonstrate.
Now, old man Wordsworth, so they say, he loved to roam the hills with his butterfly net and his botany book and a sixpenny packet of quills. And when he come home in the twilight, you'd hear his missus cry, "Now, Willie, my lad, where the hell have you been?" And Willie, he'd reply, "I've been looking for daisies, a daisy drives me wild, and whenever I see a primrose, I giggle just like a child." Then his wife says, "Chuck your kidding, I can't swallow that stuff. The only daisy that tickles you is a bit of mountain fluff." One night he come home extra late with his eyes all very bright, and his wife says, "Where have you been to, mate, to come home this time of night?" And Willie answers her promptly, "I'm nearly off my head, for I've found another new kind of bird, but his missus ups and said." You and your blooming daisies and your different kind of bird is about the fishiest story whatever I have heard. Up off then, back to your ill tops and your innocent nature stuff, and I'll warrant the bird that's sent to you is a bit of mountain fluff.
Now look here, it's not right. You can't keep disparaging famous and talented people like that.
No, you're right. You insignificant little maunders ought to get a look in occasionally. Be gone, Brickbat. And now, to more seemly matters. I have always thought that the only really up-to-date school for young ladies was St. Ethelfrith's. The headmistress, who is the popular Miss Topsy-Turvy, insists on the girls painting their nails in the school colours, and her personal belief is that by letting youth express itself freely, one eradicates repressions. The school is in the neighbourhood of Narkover, and rumour has been busy lately coupling the names of Dr. Smart Alec and Miss Turvy.
Smart Alec. Smart Alec. Smart Alec. Blast. Yes, come in.
Are you busy, Headmaster?
I'm just writing out the tickets for tomorrow's sweep for the big race. Thought it best to do it myself this year in the interests of our fair play.
Quite so.
Now, what is it, Blanket? Shouldn't you be taking a class at this moment?
Yes, yours. You sent me a note saying you were too ill to take it yourself.
Ah.
I was just wondering if you could confirm the rumours. There's a certain amount of gossip connecting your name with that of Miss Topsy-Turvy over at St. Ethelfrith's.
Ah, and what, pray, has my private life got to do with you?
Well, I'm running a book on it. Rumour has it that you pinched her ear in a picture house on one of our half-term holidays. Hmm?
Listen, Herr Blanket, did it ever occur to you exactly what my reason for behaving in such a way might be?
You were hoping to distract her attention to get a grip on her handbag.
Don't insult my intelligence. I'd got hold of her bag long before we entered the picture house. How else was I going to buy the tickets?
Ah.
Anything else?
Yes, those sweepstake tickets, they look as if they're all...
Goodbye, Blanket.
The next day, the draw for the knockover sweep took place. No one was more surprised than Dr. Smart Eric to find that he himself had drawn every horse. No one was surprised at all, in fact. Happy in the glow of this expected good fortune, the headmaster was blissfully unaware of the interest now being shown in the nature of his relationship with the beautiful Miss Topsy-Turvy by members of the local press.
Oh, Miss Turvy, Basil Quivers, waggling pole the bugle.
Yes.
Is it true that you and the knockover boss have been seeing a lot of each other lately? Speak up, love.
Well, the proximity of the two schools, of course, throws us together a good deal. But I look upon the doctor as a very serious-minded man.
Really? Then what about him pinching your ear in a pigtail?
I do not see why a busy headmaster should not have a moment's relaxation.
I'm sure. I'm sure. And there's no truth in the rumour that Dr. Smart Alec has a wife in every school.
Oh!
Miss Turvey! Come back, Miss Turvey!
Leave me alone!
Give me the smile, darling.
I'm going to Swindon, where my rich widowed mother lives, to forget.
Rich widowed mother.
St. Ethelfrith's head may wed Smart Alec. Says Miss Turvey, I believe the influence of a good woman would do wonders for him. If I thought she was a good woman, I wouldn't waste a moment on her. No good woman would have picked up those card tricks I showed her as quickly as she did. Time for further instruction, I think, what?
And so the doctor set out once again upon the increasingly worn path connecting the two schools, the path that goes via the local spirit merchants. Topsy was taking the upper sixth in deportment, when suddenly through the open window of the classroom vaulted Dr. Smart Alec.
That's it, Daphne. Keep the head straight. Don't let the books fall. Dr. Smart Alec.
Topsy, my friend, Lodestar, are you all alone?
Doctor, there are 32 girls present.
Oh, heavens, you are. Send all those creatures away.
Look, have you been drinking?
Of course. Haven't you?
Please go.
First, I must take toll of those ruby lips. Come here, my sweet. My sister.
Girls, you may go. Now, how dare you embarrass me like that? What have you got to say for yourself? Oh.
Poor Miss Turvey. News of the incident soon reached the ears of the local press.
Miss Turvey, would you call Dr. Smart Alec a drunkard?
Certainly not. As a student of psychological phenomena, I should call him bottle conscious and possibly alcohol minded, but I'm sure he is unacquainted with the base forms of alcoholism.
Obviously, he never works on a newspaper then, huh, boys?
Pardon?
Did he break into your school the other day? Through a classroom window?
Well, as I had left the window open, the question of breaking in simply does not arise.
Oh, I see now. Was he intoxicated?
There is more than one kind of intoxication.
Yeah, but you don't deny that he spoke of... taking toll of your ruby lips?
Look, I'd rather not say, though he has invited me to sit in the pavilion with him at this week's knockover match against Runton.
Sit in the pavilion, boy.
Well played, Pilcher. Let's see, it takes 630 calls to narrow a wicket.
Mm.
When I find out who stole it, I'll...
You do seem to have remarkable luck when it comes to sports, Doctor. I still can't get over how well you did in the Derby sweepstake.
Fragrant morsel, it's simple. I know the ropes in this strand of mine. Mm. Excuse me, my last litter.
Yes, sir.
Look, here are the note cases of the Rugton 11. I got them from their changing rooms. Take 10 for yourself. Use the rest to get some champagne for me in the town. We do no rubbish, mind.
Yes, sir.
Off you go. Sorry about the autopsy. Urgent school business. Is everything all right, my elfin cousin?
Smarty, they say that I am not your first love.
Come, Dusky Siren. What is a Piccadillo more or less in the great infinity of time?
Is bigamy a Piccadillo?
Ha! You have been true. I have contracted trivial unions here and there. I will divorce the hussies in bachelor of sex.
Oh.
You are my lodestar. Come, accord me the nectar of these ruby lips.
Oh, Doctor!
I've brought the champagne, sir.
Not now, you bloody fool. Later.
Sorry, sir.
Considering the frequency of such public displays of affection, many are wondering what could possibly be holding the doctor back from a proposal of marriage. Surely there can be nothing in the preposterous story that Mrs. Smart Aleck is a name borne stubbornly, if not proudly, by 12 or 13 ladies of varying age, station and place of abode. Miss Turvey shortly afterwards received a visit from a lady who would not give her name.
To what may I attribute the pleasure?
Who said anything about pleasure? You're very thick with Smart Aleck, aren't you? Well, if you'll be warned by me, you won't say any more of him.
I can take care of myself.
You little fool. It's not you he's after, it's your dough.
And who are you who thus deigned to warn me?
Well, I'm not saying I'm the only Mrs. Smart Aleck.
I refuse to believe you. It can't be true. Hand me that telephone.
About time, too. Listen, I want 20 guineas on wagon wheel in the 3:30.
Marty, it's me, Topsy.
Topsy who? Oh, you! Oh, sorry, my dainty bird of paradise. Oh, I was expecting a call.
Tell me, Smarty, have there been other women in your life?
Oh, delicate Waterloo, I cannot lie.
But you haven't ever actually been married.
Ah, sweet morsel. In his time, a man plays many parts. If I have now and then lent the glamour of my name to this or that member of your delightful sex, 'twas but a passing whim.
Oh, and where are they now?
7 in jail, 2 at large under assumed names, 1 on the run and 1 in Australia.
You're not the first. The 12th I make it. Or is it 13?
Nor was that the end of the affair, if such a term can be applied to describe occasional bouts of ear-pinching. The doctor's earlier assessment of Miss Turvey's card-sharping potential was to prove uncomfortably accurate. The beautiful headmistress had an ace up her sleeve, or so she thought. She played it that night in the Rose Garden at St. Ethelfrith's.
So, you are not to make an honest woman of me?
Devastating, lodestar. I'm sure you understand I have too much decency ever to ask you to become engaged to me with all those so-called Mrs. Smart Aleck's round place.
Heartless, Don Juan. Do you think a girl such as I would have consented to meet you without a chaperone had she not believed your intentions to be honorable?
Careful, Smarty. Sounds like the old breach of promise racket. But you have no proof that I have a proposed marriage, so have you?
I destroyed all your letters, as you bade me.
Excellent morsel. Entrancing you.
But there was that telephone conversation which was overheard by my head monitor, Agnes Horticourt.
What? How could she have overheard it?
There's an extension in the monitor's common room, connected to a tape recorder. Easy, really.
Triple damnation. What have you done? You don't trust me. Me? Why should any man wish to marry such a dissembling fiend?
Oh!
Topsy! Goodbye!
Phew. Well done, Smarty. That was close. Stick to barmaids in future, I think.
After further disruption...
Turn the wireless up, will you? Maybe they'll give us the Gee-Gees.
The judge is understood to have requested the removal of all red-haired people under 4 feet in height from the public gallery. And finally, the death was announced today of Mrs. Emmeline Gascoigne Turvey, widow of Francis Mulsington Turvey, at Seaview, Sebastopol Terrace, Swindon. It's believed that her large fortune goes to her only daughter, Topsy, at present headmistress of St. Ethelfrith's Giggling on the Hill.
You hear that, Blanket?
Yes, very sad, Headmaster.
Yes, indeed. Now that I know Topsy is rich, I need not hesitate to offer her the protection which every heiress needs in these lawless days.
You're going to marry her after all?
Not necessarily. But there are certain fortunes which, by their very magnitude, are so enticing that even shrewd businessmen are prepared to risk a breach of promise action and the consequent overhead charges. Besides which, I might get lucky and have Cockle Carrot to hear the case.
So emboldened, Smart Aleck left at once for Ireland, where the newly wealthy Miss Turvey had gone to get over the distressing news. Not so much that of her mother's long-expected demise, but rather the doctor's announcement of his renewed interest in her. He tracked the beautiful heiress down to a Dublin hotel, and there, in the lounge, teetered once more on the verge of matrimony.
Will you be settling this barbell now or later, sir?
Later, barman. Here comes my sweet little milk case now. Topsy, my fragrant lobster. I mean, lodestar.
Dr. Smart Aleck.
You parted from me with agony to be with you but for a moment to share undiluted essence of paradise. What must it be to be with you forever? Will you marry me, Topsy, my angelic tormentor?
I don't know. Write to me, Smarty dear. I need to think about it. Put your proposal in writing.
Despite so diverting a bait, the doctor still sensed the jaws of the trap closing around him. He passed a very disturbed night at his hotel in Dublin, pacing the corridors, calling frequently for stout, and waking up the other guests by torrents of oaths. So troubled was his mind that he appeared at breakfast wearing 2 waistcoats but no coat, and with his braces hanging down behind him to the perpetual peril of his trousers. However, by mid-morning he had reached a decision. In a supreme act of noble self-sacrifice, the greater love won out.
So you've come at last. What is it you have to say?
Pardon me, ma'am, but I'm told the doctor checked out hours ago. He said he was going to South America.
Are you sure?
Yes, ma'am. I searched all through the hotel. No sign of him. Though I did find this in the grate. Part of a letter, it looks like.
Let me see. Oh, Topsy, indeed I meant what I said. I want you to marry me at once, you ineffable...
Is it any help, ma'am?
Hard to say. What do you think, Blanky, darling?
It's his handwriting, sure enough, but still pretty flimsy evidence. Maybe we should drop this breach of promise tack and go for a more straightforward sting.
Whatever you wish, my sweet. You know best.
Yes.
And thereby ended the tale. There was one thing Mr. Blanket didn't know, however, that the sharp-eyed doctor was in fact already on his way back to Knarkover, along with the recently purloined keys to Blanket's most promising-looking strongbox. Further news of my good friend Dr. Strabismus, whom God preserve, of Utrecht. Dr. Strabismus has several of his more recent creations presently on display at the International Exhibition of Inventions, from where now comes this most timely broadcast.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, one stand that's been attracting a lot of attention here at the exhibition today, and not all of it from the mental health authorities, is the display of recent inventions by the world-renowned Dr. Strabismus, whom God preserve, of Utrecht. Hello, Doctor.
Greetings, fellow dear listeners.
Yes, I wonder if you'd be so kind as to tell us about some of the items on your stand. for instance, what's this amazing-looking contraption here?
This one here, this is a large marmalade dish, which, as you can see, folds up into the shape of a candlestick.
Yes, how useful.
And here, a wooden sausage, which, when reversed, like so, pours out a stream of salad oil into a bowl.
Yes, and all over a shirt, I see.
Yes, so it does. We are still exploring all the possibilities of this device. Now, here is a nice, thick, cut glass walking stick filled with very small flannel shirts.
Has anybody got a cloth?
This is a rubber wheelbarrow for wiping out illuminated addresses.
Get up on that. Yes, fascinating.
Here, a long-distance bacon pan in which bacon can be cooked very slowly in a greenhouse.
Well, that'll do. Yes, of course.
And over here, a musical ballot box for wet elections, which simultaneously fills bottles with mulberries.
Yes, very impressive, Dr. Bismuth. Thank you. You haven't come up with a clever little device for removing French dressing from evening clothes, have you?
No. I mean, who would possibly want such a thing? Not a useful invention. Over here, for example, we have my thermal diving suit pajamas.
That well-known, or perhaps I should say notorious poet, Mr. Roland Milk, has just published a slim volume of his latest work entitled Flowers in Amber. It encapsulates some remarkable ideas, possibly the most fantastic being that anyone should want to hand over good money for such juvenile rubbish. Mr. Milk's depths of understanding is perhaps best illustrated by this poem, Towards Peace, which he read recently at the Boeotian Hall.
Towards Peace. If the armies of the world dropped their guns, from the very biggest of all to the smallest ones, there would be far less danger of a stranger invading someone else. My suggestion is that soldiers, and sailors too, should all be armed with pop guns, then they couldn't do the damage that they do at present, and life would be more pleasant. Thank you.
I myself would advocate the unilateral withdrawal of Mr. Milk's verses in an attempt to achieve the same end. And I'm sure that Lady Cab Stanley, that giantess of high society, would be the first to support such a move. Several of Mr. Milk's poems, inspired by aspects of this formidable lady, have been loosely collected together under the title of the Cab Stanley Suite and put to music. To the sword might have been a more appropriate fate.
Large as life and twice as ugly, rest my beauty, rest. Let my massive head lie snugly on my breaking breast. See the stoutest rafters tremble to thy dulcet snow. How shall I my love dissemble, blown across the floor, blown across the floor? By thy mighty breath, my love, my elephantine petal.
It's unusual. He's always unusual.
Yes, it's quite interesting. He was taught by Julie's postman.
Really, but it isn't what I expected.
No.
It's in the classic mold of
life's like that, isn't it?
I'm afraid so, I've learned over the years.
This is quite delightful.
A little vulgar, I think.
Yes, we speak over the lilt of quite overcome with surprise that a thing of such mountainous size can circle and back and like a gamboling dinosaur that I suddenly fell over its track. As a foot like the inch big rock smashes down on my own.
I commissioned the
is sweet of song.
Quite unexpected, isn't it?
I think a little unexpected.
Here's the third song, Lady Kemp Stanley.
Oh, I like this rhythm. Yes. Good, good, good.
A piece is like a ripening gorgonzola, the milk drop before her.
Ripening gorgonzola.
Astonishing
imagery. Yes, it my own, my love, my
of course, he'd be nothing without his vibrato, would he?
I believe he had a late night.
Really?
Yes.
I'll give him late nights.
This should be interesting, though.
Here lies a victor that went astray and dashed itself to death in his quiet place. Mistaking for the lighthouse on its way, the brightness of Capstanis.
What? What's this?
Oh, dear.
Oh, really? Oh, dear, Lady Capstanley, no, please, leave me.
I didn't know anything like this was ever going to happen. It was so unexpected.
But, no, I didn't.
I thought they were going to start with one about your face in the lighthouse.
But what do you mean? You didn't expect anything like this. I think this is a plot.
No, no.
He only mentioned
Gorgonzola.
In my own house. There's a guest in my house.
It's part of the daring of art, Lady Capstanley.
Daring of art. Get him out of here.
I think he's going already. He has another engagement at a Mexican salon.
Eating my food. Sleeping in my bed.
Sleeping in my bed as well. It's even more worrying.
How dare you?
Oh, dear, you're typing. That can only mean one thing.
Wrong again, Muttonhead. Today it means three things. The letters I, K, and L. All of them headings in my dictionary for today.
What happened to J?
It annoyed me, so I disposed of it as a warning to others.
Oh, I see. Proceed.
Idyll. A photograph of a crowded reach upon the Thames, each punt having its gramophone in full blast, is described as an idyll.
Rot.
Improvement. Pulling down an old building and putting up a new one.
Poppycock.
Indefatigable. Women who keep on giving parties are said to be indefatigable.
Oh.
Indispensable. Anything anyone wants to sell you.
Bunkum.
Island. A small piece of land surrounded on all sides by traffic.
Oh, hum.
Kid. A Christian name generally given to prize fighters.
Oh.
Lady Godiva. Any girl who takes part in a pageant and sits on a horse wearing a large wig and a bathing costume. Library. A room where murders take place. Litter. Any object left lying about which is too small to be offensive. The word is never applied to petrol stations, advertisements, bungalows, etc.
Nonsense.
And finally, love. No score at tennis.
Oh.
There. What have you to say now, Prince of Oaths?
Well, you're always criticising. Why can't you do something constructive for once?
All right, since you asked.
Ah!
Ah, how good it feels to help others out. Goodbye.
That was Beachcomber, by the way. Adapted for radio by Michael Barfield, with Richard Ingrams, who appeared as Beachcomber. Patricia Routledge, John Sessions, and John Wells played the other characters. Your announcer was Perkins, and the producer was Thompson.